You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Oh yeah. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Toilet Hell Radio Show, the first and only podcast to be hosted by three white guys. I'm Joe Thrashenkill, and with me today, we don't have three white guys on this episode, so it's a weird one. I've got my good friend, you may know him as Brenicide, and
that's me.
We also have, it's a lady, we've got Kat Jones. How's it going, Kat?
Pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Oh, awesome. I can't wait to talk over you, to interrupt you. I am especially stoked to say the word actually to you about 4,000 times. Very stoked.
Well, you're in luck because I am very used to it.
What? Oh, I thought I was the only one.
We can call this episode Mansplaining with Kat Jones.
Oh my God, that sounds like my whole life. Can you just like write my autobiography for me?
Okay. Well,
okay, I can. Thank you.
Let's I guess we should explain things a little bit. Our good buddy 365 is out visiting family, and instead we thought it would be a cool idea to have a new voice drop by and offer up a public service for the listeners of this show. That service is we are going to hear your pleas and offer you advice. Some of it's good, some of it's bad, some of it... well, your mileage may vary, but that's the plan for this episode. Kat, how about you you give a brief introduction to folks out there that might not be familiar with you?
Sure. So I am a music journalist. I mostly focus on metal. I write for Vice. I have an advice column on Invisible Oranges called Talking After Midnight, where people send me their questions about life, love, and heavy metal, and I try and answer them to the best of my ability. And I also have a column on Metal Sucks where I talk about things that I'm in love with in the metal world because I am a total sensitive, bleeding heart person who loves everything. And so that's pretty fun. And but today I'm mostly focusing on the Invisible Oranges column and hearing from you about your questions. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Name yeah, that
wait, till you,
is...
wait till you get the questions and then we'll see. How
oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll yeah. see what happens.
Yeah. Name of that column is Talking After Midnight. You can, of course, search out that on that plus Invisible Oranges and find previous episodes or what is the articles? Yeah, the when it's written, it's an article, not an episode. We do episodes.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
For sure.
Well, you guys do it all, so.
We do it all, exactly. Kat, you've been, you've been published everywhere. You've been involved in this for a very long time. When did you first get started with heavy metal?
Oh, man. Well, probably when I was like 12 or 13. I was raised on classic rock and folk. And I'm an only child, so I spent a lot of time like in the backseat of my parents' car on long road trips and stuff. And basically, I would just obsess over whatever music they were playing. And that kind of led me down the path of heavier stuff because the riffs were always really interesting to me. And even things like Crosby, Stills, and Nash that they would play, like the intro to Ohio and stuff, I always found that to be really heavy emotionally. And the riff is such an important part of that song. And then, yeah, I just got heavier and heavier, and I'm from California, so bands like Caius were always really important to me. And I also listened to a ton of thrash and stuff when I was in high school. So, stoner rock and stoner metal were always like my major loves, and, I kind of stuck with that and started writing about that and, got a job with Metal Sucks when I was 22 and... or 23, and that kind of just launched it off, and been writing for Vice and various other people since then, and I kind of quit for a while to be a publicist. I was like mostly a doom publicist for a while.
Oh, really?
I ran a PR firm called Southern Cross PR. I think I actually sent you guys a bunch of stuff back then.
Southern Cross. I feel like that sticks out to me. Like, I've gotten emails from you. I ignored them because I was a huge dick back in the day.
That's what you do with publicists. You get like a million emails a day and it's impossible to answer them all. But I think I remember you guys writing about the band Thorax, and I worked with them for like a very brief amount of time.
Oh yeah. Thor-Ax. I remember that well.
Yeah. I
worked. That's such a great name.
Album. Yeah. They were amazing. So I think that's how I got introduced to Toilet of Hell, actually, was through being a publicist. But I quit doing that because I just realized that the marketing side of metal is, for the most part, not where my heart is, because I like to just sort of write. And I'm much more of a creative than a marketing person. And so I ended all of my campaigns with bands after they were done, and eventually went down to one or two clients and finished those up and went back to writing about metal. And it's been really wonderful ever since.
Hell yeah. I like it. So where did you kind of get this idea to start an advice column?
Well, ever since I was a kid, it seems like all of my friends sort of treat me like I'm their therapist, which is honestly like one of my favorite things. I might playfully complain about it sometimes, but I have always just really liked listening to people and connecting with people. And so after having a million jobs in the metal world, like in addition to writing and being a publicist, I've also worked in a record store and booked shows and, done promotional stuff and, written bios for bands. And like all my friends are in metal bands, and I've traveled across the United States and Canada several times as a tour manager. And so I've seen a lot of weird stuff. And so I kind of had this idea to combine my love of helping people out with whatever problems they're going through with this like incredibly useless knowledge in every other regard in the metal world. And, you know, we know that a lot of metal people, you know, they have very real problems, but not necessarily the best communication skills sometimes, or not necessarily like the best support system. And so sometimes people lack a resource to go to ask really bizarre questions, and especially anonymously. So
it's very really true. You mentioned anonymously, which as I was preparing for the show, I put out a call for people to submit messages to me anonymously about questions and otherwise. And I've never really done that before. I guess I really never had the stones to do it. But I didn't think much of it. I thought I had a pretty warm, nice group of people surrounding me on the internet, so it didn't seem too dangerous at the time. Now, would you say the people who message you wanting to kill you and the people who message you wanting to have sex with you, is it about a 50-50 ratio, or was that just me?
You know, largely people are really nice to me. Except for in the Metal Sucks column section or a comment section, because like we all know that that's a cesspool.
Fucking
even they know
cesspit.
That.
It's the worst.
Why specifically there, I don't know, but
I don't know. I think it's because they became a site when blogs were like the only forum that we had to talk about things, and then social media comment sections kind of took over after that, but they have such a following from that time that it's still like that. And I think people kind of like to ham it up and be as ridiculous as possible. So the worst things that have ever been said to me in my life have happened in the Metal Sucks comment section. And so anything somebody could say to me anonymously at this point in an ask box for an advice column, I would just kind of laugh.
Same. I mean, it was kind of water off a duck's back, most of it. I will say, though, that the people who said that they wanted to do me in some fashion or said really suggestive stuff to me, they were probably my good friends just kidding around, whereas the people who told me to definitely take my own life, I'm sure they weren't kidding so much.
No, I sent you half of the I sent you half of the thirst messages and half of the murder messages. Sorry, bro.
Good.
You know,
that's okay.
Having highs and lows that day.
You're a bigger fan of the N-word than I first thought you were. But...
Whoa.
Yeah. So,
you know, I would say that probably anybody messaging you, telling you that you should die, is either jealous because you have a platform and they don't, mm-hmm. or you're doing something right because it means that you're doing the good work that you do, like calling out Nazis and metal and saying that maybe people should be nicer to each other or something like that. And so if you're getting death threats, then you're probably doing something right.
That seems to be the par for the course.
I got suspended from Twitter just the other day. Apparently, I guess I've never really sent death threats before, and I wouldn't call this a death threat, but it's apparently abusive behavior to tell the host of NRI TV, "I hope you shoot your dick off." So catch me on Twitter sometime in the future. Who knows when?
If you're getting banned on Twitter, you've got to be doing something right.
And the NRA used to be a place where you could go to get gun safety tips. And so if there's anybody that should know how to not shoot their dick off, it should be that guy. But these days, you just never know.
Just don't know. So we brought you on the show here today because you seem very eloquent and really smart. Like, you really know your stuff here. And
thank you.
We're going to butter you up as much as possible because you're going to feel so low by the end of this.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we're going to ask you some questions that were submitted to us that aren't so much about killing yourself or having sex with you, but about metal stuff, about how to make it in the scene, what kind of stuff is important, how we should approach things like that. How does that sound? Does that sound like fun? We'll just throw some questions at you. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to read off a list. I got some really great submissions. We're going to start off very easy first, I think. We're going to have a nice quick one, and this was the first question I received, so I think that's only appropriate. So this was an anonymous message that was sent to me. The question is, "Dear Cat, how do I get a slot writing for Metal Sucks and or Noisy?"
Well, you should probably start off by not calling people that.
Did you say slot or slut?
I said slot.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. Okay. I heard slut as well.
Okay. I'm sorry. Let's try it again.
Let's try that again.
Okay. "Dear Cat, how do I get a position writing for Metal Sucks and or Noisy?"
Well, people ask me this all the time, and honestly, it is incredibly frustrating because I wrote about music for probably 4 years before I ever got paid. I went to school for journalism, and then I got an internship at the Sacramento News and Review. First, I did an events internship, which means that I basically set up chairs at events and helped them find sponsors and flyer neighborhoods for random, like, jam bands playing in the park. And eventually, when I finally convinced them that I was a good writer, they moved me over to the editorial department. So I went to editorial meetings and got to write for them for free until finally, about a year later, I said, "Hey, you know what? I would really like to get paid." And they kind of like, they would give me like a little article here and there and for very little pay. But then after that, I moved to Portland, where I got an internship at the Oregon Music News, where I was also writing for free and writing like huge interviews. Like I interviewed Matt Pike and Buzz Osborne and like Alice Cisneros and like all these people that I really should have been getting paid to interview, but I did not get paid a single cent. Then I moved on to Metal Sucks, where I worked for them, wrote their newsletter for a year and a half and didn't get paid. And then it wasn't until after that that Vice finally paid attention to me and I started getting paid to write. And now I get paid for Metal Sucks too. But anyway, point is, it takes a very, very long time. So if you want to be a writer, you have to know that you have to put in like years of free labor and be humble and know that like you have to know how a newsroom works and you have to know how to pitch an editor and just going into it thinking I'm a good writer and I therefore should get a job at a really, really amazing place like Metal Sucks or Vice immediately is probably not going to work out. So you have to like put your nose to the grindstone. And if you want it, and if you're good, and if you're excited, and you genuinely love it, then eventually good things will happen, but it takes time.
So what you're saying is this is a glamorous position with lots of
money. Oh my God, yes. Yeah. I'm just rolling around in money at all times, and people throwing themselves at me, and you know, it's just like a glamorous rock star lifestyle.
don't you agree though that you know, the pay was really getting the experience to talk to someone like Buzz Osborne? I mean, how ungrateful of you, honestly.
I mean, honestly, in hindsight, it was really cool because so that interview ended up in a best rock writing book of like 2013. I got him to talk about like Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love and like all this random stuff that I had never heard him talk about in an interview before. Wow. And I couldn't believe I got it on a record. Like it was so bizarre. First I called him and he thought I was a telemarketer twice and hung up on me. And I thought that was hilarious because it was so like exactly what King Buzzo's personality seems like it would be, like, ah, fuck you, you're a telemarketer, and then hang up. And I'd call him back and be like, no, this is Kat Jones, I'm a writer for Oregon Music News. We have an interview scheduled for this morning at this time. Yeah. And then he ended up getting really comfortable with me and saying all those things. So even though it was just an internship and even though I was working my ass off for no money, it ended up being one of the coolest experiences of my life. And if I didn't have that experience in my back pocket, I would have no idea what I'm doing now. So
I will say that interviewing musicians is a very particular skill set, and that anybody just starting off, like, well, you kind of just have to go in head first because you don't know what you're going to get out of anybody. Some of these dudes are, let's just say, extremely eccentric.
Yeah.
One of my biggest dreams as an artist is to give a bad interview.
Same. Oh my God, I'd love that.
I would just love to be, like, I was reading a Twitter thread where everybody was talking about how, like, the worst artists they've ever interviewed and why they were the worst interviews. And I was like, these people sound like they kick fucking ass. I want to be like that. I want to be a smug piece of crap to some bright-eyed young journalist just trying to make it. But yeah, I've had some experience kind of blogging and making my own blog and trying to do that. I went through Google AdSense as my way of just kind of doing the typical cost per click thing. Mm-hmm. And it took years for me to earn maybe, like, at the end of it, I probably got, my best month was like $100 in a month, which was huge for me. I thought that was so amazing. But if you really wanted to try to do that for a living, I would have to do like 10 times that at the time, at the least, to even think about it. And even still, that would be like barely anything. That would be $12,000 for the whole year to get 10 times the money I was getting. So obviously that didn't work out.
And I think I listened to a previous episode where you were saying that randomly you logged in and they told you that your account had fraudulent clicks on it or something because too many people were clicking on your ass.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like, isn't that the point?
Well, what had happened was, to get specific with it, I had done a Seth Putnam piece, and the advertisement that was on my page was for like a rape center help.
Oh no.
And yeah. So what had happened was all the pieces of shit who thought it was so funny that I did a Seth Putnam piece and that I mentioned how he would talk about how raping was funny. And then a Rape Center ad came up. And so
Jesus
everybody.
Christ. That's gosh. The worst possible thing that could ever happen there.
Yeah. Yep. So.
Yeah, that's just like keywords gone wrong.
Right. So I think the people specifically from this Rape Center complained about the source because every time somebody clicks, the people who are advertising, they have to pay. So they probably just followed that trail back to my post and called bullshit and complained to Google. And then that went. So, totally out of my hands, totally not my fault. It's just how AdSense is. It's all robotic. Mm-hmm. So, it's definitely a very, very, not safe way to make a living. It could be taken from you anytime. So if you wanted
just
to,
just because
do your
they
own
decide
thing,
that what you're doing is not something they feel like paying for.
Absolutely. And I think that, new things coming out like Patreon are a way better way to go. I see Invisible Oranges is doing very well with their Patreon campaign.
Yeah. In fact, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I wanted to plug that a little bit. They work their asses off, and they've been trying to make a Patreon happen for years now. And they finally made one a couple weeks ago, and I'm so incredibly proud of them for how much it's taken off. But if any of you people out there listening have ever read Invisible Oranges and liked what they do, or found a new band, or you read my column and it gave you advice or whatever, consider being a Patreon on their account. They have their rewards start super, super low. I think like $3.33 or something. So
only half evil.
Only half evil. I think they call it a mini beast, and then it's like a full beast is the $6.66 or something.
So extreme. So edgy.
Yeah. And then some of the rewards are like free entry to shows, or getting to be in a group where you can tell them what to write about and who to interview and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. So definitely.
So as you can see, just a little question like that, we could talk forever about. So I guess at this, Joe, do you have anything to add?
Oh yeah. If you want my advice on getting into the world of writing, I mean, the dumb quippy thing would be to say don't, but, what I did was, I submitted pictures that didn't get accepted. So I started my own dumbass website to publish them.
There you go. I think that's the best way to go, because if you're not going to make any money anyway for years and years, and you want to get it out there and you want people to read your stuff, go for it, man. Blogspots, WordPresses, those start off at free. So,
yeah, in fact, that's a part of it that I forgot to mention, is that like, if you want to be a writer, you have to write. You have to write all the time, even if you're not getting paid, even if nobody's reading it. Keep your skills sharp. Make a Tumblr, whatever you need to do, even like Instagram descriptions. Like, you can write essays in that thing. Just get the word out that you know what you're talking about, and never stop being excited, and somebody will take notice.
Awesome. Great, great answers. So we're going to do another one that's short and sweet, but we could talk about forever. This is okay, another.
I'll try to be less verbose. That's very hard for me.
It's another anonymous message, and they ask, Dear Cat, is working with a PR firm worth it?
100%.
You think so?
Unless you personally know the editors of every publication that you want to have your songs premiered on and or reviewed on or whatever, it's important to do that, because these days you don't really need a record label, but you do need the exposure. So if you're putting up the money to put your own record out and you're just going to put it on Bandcamp, then the worst thing possible would be for it to just appear on the internet, on your social media for a week, and then disappear down the algorithm and the news feed, never to be seen again. So if you hire a PR firm, it's their job to announce the album like 3 months in advance and get the best songs on your record premiered on various websites, send the promo out so that writers can review it, and then get the whole album streamed somewhere either the day it comes out or a few days before. And I mean, if you're friends with all those writers, and they shouldn't be writing about you anyway, frankly, because that's not how journalism should work. So yeah, it's better if you can just be an artist, like be your weird artist self and just make music and make that the only thing you have to focus on. Hire somebody who knows what they're doing to get your music out there so that you don't have to worry about it, and you don't have to be the person harassing your friends all the time to come to shows or, you know, listen to your record or whatever, because you're probably going to end up a lot less jaded if somebody else is doing that grunt work for you, and you can just focus on being an awesome artist.
Yeah, it's tough to be an artist with many hats.
yeah.
It really is, and you have to be these days. Usually what the way that I kind of approach it is PR will be worth it if you're worth it. Like, if you feel like you have genuinely great music, and you do the very basic foundation stuff, like you kind of get your own shows booked and you make your own social media and you do a little bit of outreach for yourself and you kind of gather the information to discover whether or not people really like you and warm up to your music and want to hear more of it. Just kind of, if you do that sort of very small sample market thing first, then absolutely. Yeah. It's so easy these days, like you said, especially with the algorithm that every social media site has, it's so easy to just be buried. It's so much harder than it used to be to get yourself out there. You used to be able to just write a Facebook post and anybody could see it. But now these days it's so tough. So if you feel like you got, if you feel like you got something genuinely good and the people who have heard it do like it, and you're not just another kind of bunch of friends who are bored and want to play on stage and play some cookie cutter scummy death metal thing, because we won't review it anyway. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
And also it's like, just make sure that you have extremely good social media. Make sure that every single social media platform has a link to find your music immediately. Like if I go look at a band's page and I can't find their album within like two clicks, then I'm not going to listen to it.
Same.
And so make sure that your stuff is clean and obvious and fun to look at. So make sure you're posting pictures and like making everything in your voice with your humor and or not humor, if that's your thing. And make it so people enjoy coming to you once they find out about you. And if you are incredibly good and people can just find out about you without any sort of promotion whatsoever, then that's rad. But chances are somebody who knows what they're doing and who genuinely believes in you as a band, and honestly, any publicist worth their salt should not take on any bands that they don't personally love.
Yes, very much so.
And like, I don't know, there probably are some out there that just want to take your money, but for the most part, like the ones that really know what they're doing and the ones that you can see on their roster that they have like really good people that maybe even sound like you, and they already have the connections to the websites that will be best for your music to be premiered on.
Totally.
They will definitely do right by you if you pay the right amount of money and you still work really hard and make sure that your band is as good as it possibly can be.
Yeah, I struggle to call it predatory, but I can't think of a better word for it. There will be PR firms that have a bit more of a predatory approach to getting clients. They will just go on Bandcamp, see whatever brand new band comes up, and sell you this overblown PR package and do minimal work for you. And a lot of bands will see that and they'll say, hey guys, we just got noticed by this PR firm, you know, that thinks we're really, I got like five emails like that from five different places like that. Right.
We've threatened to do this a million times, but one episode, we will just name names of these folks that like will offer you a bloated package that costs way too much money and gets you really nothing.
Yeah, for sure. We'll do it one of these days. We won't do it here because we got better things to do. Way better
to do. More to this point, though, I'd say that your own ability, your skill at your instrument, your songwriting, your production, that's a big piece of your success. The other piece, the essential piece to get bigger, is who you know. If you don't know anybody, you better know somebody. So try to work with a reputable PR person that does know somebody and can get push your name out there.
Because it's literally their job. So
yeah.
If you're trying to like network all the time, then people are going to notice that, maybe self-promotion is your main deal and they might start avoiding you. But if you pay somebody whose literal job it is to know people and send music to them so that they can put it on their websites, just let them do that. They're better at it than you are. They love doing it. It's their job. It's probably paying for their kids' college. Like just go with that.
I'll shout out my boy Curtis here. I'm definitely going to hit him up whenever I want to do new music, because he does an excellent job and he takes his job very seriously.
Yeah, so, he's awesome. He's really cool.
Curtis Dewar PR. He's great. And I wouldn't take any emails that are coming to you from PR unless it's a very reputable brand that you can recognize. Just because, like I said, you do have these sort of predatory PR companies that are looking to make the buck and they don't care how good you are, and they'll do the email blast for you and then they'll be done with you.
And I mean, like, if you get a personal email, like in your actual email account from a publicist that you know that's saying, hey, I heard that you're putting out a record soon and I would be honored if I could be the person doing press for you, then yeah, that's definitely worth listening to. But of course, if you just get like a weird automated Bandcamp message from somebody who's just like searching the hashtags, ignore it.
There you go. Very good.
Great. Okay. Unless there's anything else to add, I think we'll move on.
No, man. Give us a juicy one.
This one's so juicy. This one, I got this question and it was just, oh my God. It's so like gabby and gossipy. I love it. I love it. Okay. This is another anonymous one for very good reason. But dear Kat, my significant other likes to go to metal shows with me. I just want to watch and enjoy the bands, but my significant other often ruins my good time. Drinking too much, I've missed sets dealing with it, getting mad at people in the crowd, talking during the bands, minor stuff, but still very annoying. I don't want to hurt my significant other's feelings, but is there any good way to stop this behavior or suggest that maybe they stay home? That's the question.
Ooh. Okay, well, my knee-jerk reaction to this question is, if you are concerned about hurting your significant other's feelings by hiding very serious feelings that you have about a big part of your life, then you're going to have a way bigger problem down the line when it blows up and they've never heard you bring this up before. So if you're having an issue where this person is ruining your time at metal shows and or also sounds like just having a drinking problem in general, that's something that you need to communicate about and make sure that you listen to their side of the story too. Don't just accuse them and make sure that you use I statements. Like I feel like every time I go to a show, you know, I tend to have to take care of you when this happens instead of you always do this. But just make sure that your significant other knows that that's a really important part of your life and they're an important part of your life too. And therefore you want to share those things in the same space, but some things are going to have to change if that's going to keep on happening and those things are going to be able to coexist.
Yeah.
Good answer.
Very good answer. I'm very Thanks. Mother hen. I'm like a finger waving, like, motherfucker did what? I'm that kind of friend. I get so upset at other people's significant others. So when I read this, I just got really angry and I felt really bad for this person. And my knee jerk reaction was like, okay, so let's be honest here. It's not, I'm not a betting man, you know, but I think it's a pretty safe wager that this person's just kind of an asshole in general. I mean, you don't just walk into a metal show and abracadabra, you suck. You know what I mean? It's like, I just, I can't imagine that this person who is aggressive with strangers, which I thought was really concerning, gets that drunk in public at what I can assume is a legal drinking age. Like, that shit is so obnoxious. And you're afraid to approach about these sort of problems. I mean, girl or dude or whoever sent this in, it's like, wow. Like, I'm sure you love this person and I'm sure there's lots of things about them that you can appreciate their company for, but you're going to need to have like a really hard sobbing kind of long into the night fight to get through to this person. You know, this isn't one of those things where you can dance around their feelings. This is like deeply rooted issue stuff.
That seems like it might be a, you know, maybe that's just the you know, criminal Irish within you that, you know, thinks that's the right move here.
Yeah.
My perspective is, I've been in relationships like this where the person is otherwise a pretty good person, but this is a drinking problem. If you turn 180 from a nice person into a raging asshole when you're drunk, that means that you should not drink. And that's a difficult thing to broach for people, especially young people. If you're like in your early 20s, you know, like you want to party and get trashed and shit. But if you're actively ruining the night of everyone around you, as a lot of young people do, because they don't know how to handle their alcohol and they have, you know, there's a pervasive, alcohol problem within our culture. It really makes things difficult. So, I think that you kind of have to put it as an ultimatum. Like, if you want to go out, you know, you have to keep yourself at this level. If you can't keep yourself at this level, you need to maybe consider stopping it entirely.
That's fair.
Yeah, and the other thing is that, to be honest, shows are not for everybody. You know, crowds are really stressful, and there's people bumping into each other. There's people acting obnoxious. There's other people who are drunk. There are you know, it's too hot, you get stepped on, you get beer spilled on you. Like, unless you're really enjoying yourself, you shouldn't be there. Because, I mean, I have a tendency to date very introverted people who don't like crowds. There's like one overarching thing about my type that has always been the case. And so this is something that I am very experienced with. And that is, you know, if that person needs to have a ton of alcohol to be at a show, then chances are it's not really a relationship problem so much as this person needs to understand that maybe they're unhappy at shows and they're dealing with it in a way that is really not good. And so maybe just for some people, it's okay to listen to the record at home, or it's okay to find a quiet spot and go sit down. Like if there's like an upstairs part where there's seats, or hang out on the side and lean against a wall or something, to like find a way to make shows work for you so that you're not triggered to like be aggressive with people or drink too much or whatever. And if it continues being a problem and metal is a really big part of your life and it continues to ruin this part of your life for you because you can't go out with them and have a good time, then maybe this person isn't right for you.
Damn. Yeah.
I'd recommend addressing this sooner rather than later, because if you wait, your resentment for this action and this person is just going to grow. That'll
And actually, I should add to that, full circle with what I was saying about me having experience with introverts, is that also if that person says, hey, I need to go for a walk, or I need to go lean against a wall, or I need to go sit in a chair, and you want to be up front, like headbanging and moshing and doing whatever, then you need to be okay with that person taking care of themselves and doing what they need to do, and don't expect them to be by your side at all times. Like, let them take care of themselves and find their own way to enjoy a show.
Very good. I'm so big brother, man. I'm glad I don't have like a little sister or something, because I'll be like, what did he do? I'd be that guy and The Godfather, where he drags him in the street and just starts like wailing on him.
Yeah, you're thinking of Sonny. Goodfellas.
No, that's The Godfather. Sonny, we just watched it. My wife, it's her favorite movie. We just watched it this weekend, and the brother is abusive, and he finds out he hit his little sister, so he drags him out in the street. Yeah,
apparently, there's a lot of paternal violence in these gangster movies. What's the deal with that?
What? Come on.
It's funny. I'm Italian and I have never seen any of those movies. I've never even seen Scarface. Like, I really need to, just spend a weekend like watching all of those gangster movies.
Gangster movies.
It's such a cliche, but I love all that shit, man.
It's great. Scorsese films. I would start with The Godfather and work your way out, because that's kind of the pinnacle. Scorsese stuff, Casino and Goodfellas.
Yeah, those are two of my favorites.
I'm trying to work my way through The Sopranos right now. I'm on like season 3, so maybe I'll finish that first.
There's like 10,000 hours of The Sopranos. That's such a commitment,
but it's so good.
All right, well, we'll let you have that one. So that was a great answer. I'm glad we brought you on, because you're gooder at this than me. I just say break up. You know, that's just me.
Communication is everything, man.
Yeah.
I truly believe that every relationship problem can be solved with communication if you are motivated and willing to make the changes that are needed because that person's important to you. So if you have the good communication about it and then that person doesn't want to fix that problem, then it's time to break up.
But, right. I learned at this age that you can't be afraid to fight. You can't be afraid to have the tough conversations.
As long as it's a respectful,
right,
like disagreement or whatever, and like you're not attacking that person, and not insulting them and not making them feel like they can't be heard or whatever. Like, be a good listener as well as being a good communicator.
For sure. Absolutely. So with that, I think we'll move on to our next one. Something that's not so hard. Maybe not so advicey, but a really good question, and I wanted to get your take on it. This comes from my good buddy Vincent. He's a writer for Nine Circles, and he asks, is it really a faux pas to wear a band's shirt to a show where you're going to see said band live?
You know, I actually answered this question in the last advice column I did, I think.
Oh, really?
And my answer was, no, I think that's a complete bullshit thing that people have just made up to make other people feel bad. If you're excited about a band and you want to wear their shirt to their show, like, I mean, the only faux pas that could possibly be, or the only thing that could possibly be said about you is that you're overexcited. And you know what? We need a little bit more overexcitement in metal. So my answer is no, but clearly I'm getting some disagreement here. So
no.
So let's go ahead and address this, because we've mentioned this movie on the show a number of times because it's hilarious. The film PCU, Jeremy Piven gives advice to a young Jon Favreau before he started directing Iron Man movies that you never wear a band's shirt to their show. Don't be that guy. For some reason, that's for a movie that's kind of been forgotten, that has had a pervasive moment in music culture. I think it's not a big deal. What I want to see more of, though, is bands wearing their own shirt on stage.
Yeah. Totally. Or like in their promo photos or whatever.
No, my skin is crawling, you guys.
If you're going to wear your own band's shirt on stage or in your promo photos, or if you're the fan at the show wearing a shirt of the band that you're about to go see, then there's no way around it. You're going to look like a dingus. But yeah. if that is the biggest answer. Problem, like, if people are going to get mad at you for that and tell you that you shouldn't be there, then that's where I have a problem.
Absolutely.
You do whatever the hell you want.
Right. And I agree with that. Really do what you want. Do what makes you happy. And I used to get very, I was just kidding. I was playing it up. I used to get very cringy about that stuff and judgy. But there's logistical reasons for why I don't, I guess I could say, approve of that. And it's interesting you brought up the band's wearing their own shirt, because that was actually a separate question that we now don't have to get to. So it's a twofer. It's a two-for-one special. Someone asked, is it okay for a band to wear their own shirt, or what we think about that? So this is a two-for-one special here. We'll hit both questions.
So the way I feel about that is that, of course, you're going to look like an idiot if you do that. Like, there's no way around it. However, I know a lot of bands who end up wearing their own shirts because they're broke. And they have a whole box full of their own shirts.
Right.
And if the alternative is that you're not going to have a shirt to wear, then who cares? You know,
Matt Pike, I guess.
You know what? Matt Pike can do whatever the hell Matt Pike wants.
I would suggest, if you're going to wear your own band's shirt on stage, that you convince your other bandmates to do the exact same thing. That way it's like a coordinated attack, you know?
Yeah, right. Don't be Jason Newsted. Outfit for the evening.
Don't be Jason
Newsted.
The thing
is, Matt Pike doesn't wear shirts, so
I know. I'm aware of this.
No,
I've made everyone very aware.
If he all of a sudden started just showing up at every show like wearing a High on Fire shirt, it would be so hilarious, because it would be like another shirt related silly thing involving Matt Pike, and I would be on board.
Yeah, I would go as far to say, yeah,
so I want him to wear a shirt that just says Matt Pike on it.
I would buy that shirt.
I would go as far as to say that if Matt Pike just out of nowhere didn't wear a shirt for how many 30 years he's been doing this, and he all of a sudden comes on stage and wears his own shirt, that's what is going to make it specifically cool. Matt Pike doing that.
Yeah.
That's how we get into cool. But let me get back to what I was saying. The logistical reasons are this. So you go to a show and you're wearing the band's shirt. To me, it's number one, it's a redundancy thing. And number two, it's a missed opportunity. So everybody who's at that show is a fan of that band for the most part, especially like a headliner or something. Now, obviously, they sell merch at the tables. We all saw the table. We all saw the shirt that they're selling there. So if you throw that over what you have on, sure, great. Obviously, no one's going to think twice or give you a hard time about that. But if you go into your closet and you know you're going to, we'll say High on Fire, because that's what we're talking about. You go to a High on Fire show with your High on Fire shirt. It's like the whole point of you wearing that shirt is to tell people, I like High on Fire. And everyone standing there is like, yeah, we know. So do we. So it's just a redundancy thing. That's how you look like a dingus. That's the most part.
Totally.
The other thing is, it's a missed opportunity to represent, man. You got a crowd full of metalheads that you could rep some super obscure band that maybe they don't know about, or you could put it out there that you're way into some other band and you could have that connection. You know, you could have that conversation with somebody at the show. I've had guys come up to me and be like, "Oh, 3 inches of blood, sick hoodie, man." You know, and that kind of starts the conversation, puts it out there. Maybe people won't recognize it and ask you about it. And, you know, I always love those opportunities to totally represent.
Are you ready?
Yeah. You know, that's a big thing in Portland, that I loved so much, is that when bands do promotional photos or when they go on tour or when they go on stage, like, it's not even really talked about necessarily, but it's just a thing that they do, that they wear their friends' band's shirts. And yeah, I've always thought that that's just so cool. And I've noticed that, people go out of their way to like make sure they put on a shirt like that before like a photo shoot or whatever. Anyway, what were you going to say?
That's pretty much it. I just think that, you know, you got these, it's a great opportunity to show off what your tastes are. And, you're also just kind of telling everybody what everybody already knows. Like, you stood in the line, you paid for the ticket, you're here for High on Fire, you know, just, you don't really need to put the banner out there that you're a High on Fire fan, because we know, man, you know.
So, and that's when I said that, you know, sometimes it's because you're broke and that's the only shirt that you have. Right. I don't think that Matt Pike falls into that category. I think he can buy himself other shirts.
Yeah, and he could sell a couple amps maybe and he'd be okay.
The second part of that is that Matt Pike actually lives in my neighborhood and I see him around all the time and he wears flannels usually. So there you go. Yeah.
All right, y'all. Are you ready for a hot take? Because I think I figured it out. You know,
burn one up. Let's do it.
So you know, like those shit bags, like in the metal sucks comment section, they're always like, this thing where you're not being a massive piece of shit, that's virtue signaling. You know, I think that wearing a metal tee is virtue signaling, because you're signaling to other people your superior patrician taste. Like, oh, I see that you're wearing a 3 inches of blood shirt. That's cool. I'm more into Time Ghoul via this t-shirt. And you're trying to one-up the folks around you via superior taste. Virtue signaling via t-shirt. What do you think about that?
You're trying to... So you go to the show. What you're saying is you go to the show that is not as good as the one that could be on your t-shirt.
Right.
Ah, I see. Okay. Very, very... It's a thing.
I think that's very... I mean... I know that you're being mildly facetious here, but I think that virtue signaling is simply when you're saying, aren't I awesome because I don't treat women like shit? Or like, isn't our site awesome because we do this stuff that is so great? Whereas like just wearing a shirt that you paid money for because you like a band, I think that's just saying, hey, I supported this band, or like, here's a cool band I like, you should like it too. I feel like equating those things would be maybe a little unfair, but like, yeah. I said, I also understand that you were being kind of silly. So
yeah, I think I think virtue signaling, I mean, if you got to pretend to be a good person and you just act like a good person as a result of pretending, where the hell's the harm? Like, what? What's wrong with that? You know, it's like, well, okay, I'm doing good things to be cool. Okay, well, that's pretty cool of you, so keep it up.
I like that. That's a good idea.
Yeah. So that's my super hot take. Let's move away from shirts, because apparently I have like four questions about shirts. So I'm gonna work on that. But
I mean, shirts are a big deal, man.
I guess so, yeah.
Serious business.
You said you wear one or like, not. This is the product that you sell in music now. Like, you're not necessarily selling a CD. You're selling a live performance or a t-shirt, or, you know, if you've got the dough to put up for it, vinyl.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of bands will quip that they're traveling t-shirt salesmen. That's really their job.
That's hilarious. And so true.
So make good shirts, guys. That's make the good shirts first and then make music.
Yeah, and while we're on the topic, don't just make shirts. Make other things. Make belt buckles. Make flasks. Make shot glasses. Make flags. Make, you know, I was just saying the other day on Twitter that I think it would be really hilarious if bands made postcards of their show posters, and you could like buy a postcard and like send it to your friend and like write about the show. Sure. It would be the dorkiest thing ever, and it would be so awesome, and it would be a great way to make like $2, you know.
Yeah, and it's cheap to do.
Yeah. So anyway, shirts are important, but also make sure that you have good merch in general, because if people like your band and you have cool stuff, they will desperately want to give you their money. Just let them.
Let's move back to kind of promotional questions, stuff like that. This comes from a young lady. We mutually follow each other on Twitter. Her name is Krista, and I believe she's the lead singer from a band called Dialith. Which I haven't had the chance to check out, Krista, but I certainly will. And here's a little shout out for you. And it's going to be funny based on the question that you're asking. What's the best way to get an album / EP / music video noticed? Which is very general, but I think.
Yeah, that's a very general question, because there are so many right ways to do that. And but I think that in general, the best way is to just make sure that the video itself is awesome. And it's not just your band playing on a stage from multiple angles.
Oh,
like, make
you.
Sure there's a storyline, like hire an actor or do the acting yourself or whatever. Get somebody to really write like a good story arc, and go to a really cool location, and make sure that when people are watching it, you can never forget it. It's like that's how Red Fang got famous. You know,
yeah,
prehistoric
dog. I remember
dog.
Watching their the video where they're blowing their advance from was it Relapse?
Oh yeah, that song is Wires. That was the second or third music video, because they at the beginning they were just working with this guy named Whitey McConaughey, and he is amazing and just wrote the most hilarious videos for them. But the first one was this song that had been out on their first record for years, and like the song was like on their MySpace. And nobody took notice of it, and like they were just a nobody band. And then they made a music video for it, where they found some dudes LARPing in the park, like dressed as wizards and having like a fake battle with each other. And they like go make fun of them, and then they decide to take all the beers that they drank and turn them into armor. So they're like, one guy's like a Tecate knight and one guy's like a Rainier knight, and they go out to the park and they battle with the LARPers and they lose, and it's so incredibly funny.
Yes.
And that video went viral, and on top of that, the song is really good. So it's not like it was just like a cool video and like, you know, the band sucks or whatever. Like, Red Fang is an incredible band and always has been, but they just needed somebody to take notice, and this video changed everything for them, you know. And and then they continued making funny videos to the point where like that kind of became their thing. Like, they're the funny video band.
Now they have to.
Now they have to. But I mean, they've kind of stepped away from that a little bit. I think they worked with other people, and now they have so much clout that they just tour all the time anyway. And people know that they're a really good band, so they go see them, and their shows are so much fun. And so a good and or funny video can change everything for you. And you don't necessarily have to have a publicist premiering it somewhere. You just have to make sure that the video is so good that it makes somebody watch it and go, holy shit, I have to share this with my Facebook right now and like tell everybody like this band is hilarious or whatever.
Another great example is the band Allegion. They did a really funny video where they kind of do this this big circle of genres. So they have to they have like a dial where they spin it around to see what genre it lands on. And when it lands on black metal, they all get in corpse paint and get an armor and like pose in the woods. And
oh
then
God,
when
that's
it lands,
I've never seen that.
When they land on, I think it's Slam, they all wear like flat brimmed hats and, like ridiculous chains and stuff. It's one of my favorite videos, but yeah, the video you're talking about, it's Prehistoric Dog. I very much want you guys to check it out. If you haven't seen it, it made their career, 'cause it's like the best music video of all time. Top 10.
It really is.
It's so good. I love it.
And the other one, the one that you were referring to before, where they're blowing their advance from Relapse, is called Wires. And it's also hilarious. And it's also kind of like an unofficial tour of like old Portland, or not old Portland, but like Portland 7 years ago or something like that. And it's very much like a tour of the neighborhood that they live in and stuff. And if you want to get an idea of like what Portland was about 7 years ago, it's very cool.
Funny story with that video. Once it premiered, like the day after, I didn't use Twitter very much before, and I added Brian Posehn, who's in the video. He has this funny little cameo where he's the gas station attendant, and he says, "Enjoy your diarrhea" to them when they walk away with a million snacks. And I just added him, and I said, "Man, that was fucking hilarious. I love that." And like in 2 minutes, Brian Posehn messaged me back, and he was like, "Yeah, thanks, man. They rock." And my heart, my heart exploded. I couldn't That's so funny. That a random celebrity like talked back to me. And I've been like a Twitter addict ever since, like just adding all sorts of people that don't want to talk to me. So
that was what did it.
That's what did it.
Talking to you.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Yeah, right.
That's so funny. Brian Posehn's amazing. He did a whole bunch of cool stuff in Portland. Like, actually, I should say I live in Portland. I don't know if that was said already in this podcast, but
Red Fang hard. We get it.
Well, I mean, I was a fan of them before I even moved to Portland, but
Before they were popular.
I first watched. No, I'm not saying because before they're popular. I'm just saying that video went viral when I still lived in Sacramento. Before I moved. Anyway, point is, Brian Posehn, one time he did a show where, like he did a comedy show at this local bar that used to be owned by Relapse, and, they had Sons of Huns open for him. So it was like a rock show, but then the comedian came on. In addition to that, he also teamed up with this sandwich shop that my friends used to own called Big Ass Sandwiches. It was like a food cart in Portland, that eventually, they moved into a brick and mortar shop, and then they ended up closing down. But for a while they teamed up with Brian Posehn, and, they made a Pantera themed sandwich that was called the Vulgar Display of Porkage.
Porkage.
It was really, really funny. So like, it was in like the Pantera font and everything. And, he basically just like showed up at their cart one day and was like, can I make a sandwich with you guys? And they're like, fuck yeah, you can. So he's really cool, and he's a huge supporter of like the little guy, both in metal and sandwiches. And yeah, he's rad.
Speaking of metal sandwiches and Pantera, I still caught like Pantera bread every time we go, and it's funny to nobody except me, but I always caught Pantera bread.
Yeah, whoever made that logo had a really good idea, and that's really funny.
Been rocking with it ever since. So yeah, I think Kat's right on. I think you should do something that's original and set yourself out, specifically with a music video. Since that's what you're thinking of doing, since you added music video in the question here, I think that would be a great focus, is make a really, really great video, because video is just, it's the future, man. YouTube, come on. You know, make
something. And whether it's funny or poignant or just really good, I mean, there is no one right way to do a music video, and it doesn't have to be hokey and funny in order to be good, but just make it interesting and unforgettable so that people will never forget the name of your band.
Sure. Go ahead, Joe.
Let me just throw this out there. Making a video that's worth watching. I'm not talking about a fucking lyric video, because nobody wants to watch those. It will cost you money, and it will cost a lot of time, and you need to work with somebody who has some experience in making videos. Because you can check Toilet of Hell every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time to watch examples of videos that did not spend a lot of time and money and care into making their videos. It's called Video Breakdown, and if you're not careful, you'll end up as a GIF that Jordan makes of you.
He's brutal.
I mean, there is a chance that, you know, you could be so bad at this that you inadvertently create the room of music videos. But again, it's once in a generational talent of bad is unlikely. So the most likely result is just some green screen nonsense. There's a lot of people in your neighborhood that probably have went to school for videography or do it in their part time. Talk to them. Don't try to do it yourself. Yeah.
What you got to do is you got to get an abandoned warehouse. You got to get two dudes with hair longer than the rest of their bodies. They just got to hold their Jacksons at their waist, and they just swing their hair crouched over. And then you just got to make invisible oranges like claws at the camera, and it'll be, and the drummer and will be doing his drummer thing with hair that doesn't match anybody else's. And he's wearing a hat because he doesn't give a shit, because he's the only drummer in town. He can do what he wants. Right. And then that's your video. put it out there. It'll be great.
I really like your point about how drummers tend to be like the only one in like 20 bands because there's like never enough of them.
Never. I started drumming specifically because I knew that, like the age of 13. And I quit because I was 13 and I had, you know, no discipline, but
but at least the motivation was there.
Yeah, the correct motivation, which was I wanted to be popular and loved by people. I didn't want to make good music. So that's still true. That's still exactly how I feel these days.
Can I give a hot take really fast?
Please, yes.
I like lyric videos because, and I will tell you why, because I think if you go to a show and you know all the lyrics to a song, you're going to have a better time. Like, no matter what, if you can shout certain parts of the song, especially if they're super anthemic, then it's going to engage. If you as a band are putting out a music video that has lyrics in it, especially if it's like before you put out the real video or whatever, just to get people to know a new song or something, people are going to have so much more fun at your show. However, it's not a replacement for a real video. You can't say, oh, we made a lyric video, therefore we don't have to do anything else, because they're not interesting and they're not, they don't do anything for you aside from show people the lyrics and like show them a new song. Metal doesn't have enough, metal doesn't allow enough opportunities for people to learn the lyrics these days, because it used to be that you'd buy a record and you would listen to it like 50 million times and you'd learn every word. People don't do that anymore because they just like listen to a playlist and then they forget about it. So if you can get people to learn the lyrics to your songs, they're going to be bigger fans.
One more shout out based on lyric videos. Yeah, lyric videos are generally terrible. Usually what it is they just kind of animate the album cover in this weird wavy way. And then they just like put in big impact font, like the stupid lyrics. If you want to see a really awesome lyric video, and maybe this might not be any of your cup of tea, but Harakiri for the Sky, You Are the Scars. It's like 10 minutes long, but it's like a guy with beautiful calligraphy, like writing out the lyrics and then just like dumping ink and red ink all over it as it goes, and it swirls around the lyrics. It's freaking awesome. I can't explain it. You got to just go check it out.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a cool, it's the only lyric video that I like. I don't generally like them, but I watched all 10 minutes of that without even missing a beat. It was awesome.
The first one that comes to my mind that I really like is, the one that Conan did for their album Revengeance that came out like 2 years ago. And I'm totally forgetting what the song is called. It was the only lyric video they did for it. And their artwork is so cool because the same guy has done all of it. And it's like all super caveman. Their whole thing is like caveman battle doom. And they have like weird druid looking people on horses or in armor or whatever. And this lyric video kind of just goes around this world of this artwork from this guy and has the lyrics on it. And it's also not very long for a doom song. It's not a very long song. So it's not like you have to sit there forever and read it all, but
I just looked it up. It's just Revengeance. It's the
title track.
Yeah. It's just cool. A title track. So check it out. Conan Revengeance. It was released in
I guess to answer the question of like that we were originally asked, that had nothing to do with lyric videos. Definitely don't do that if that's your first other thing. But as a side note, lyric videos can be cool and helpful, but they don't replace real ones.
Hell yeah. What do you think, Joe? Anything else?
I think that if you have a little bit of time, maybe like $15, you should try to put together a video like Morbid Angel's latest. With starships going across the sky and whole alien races and stuff like that. Just do that, and then I'll watch it.
Oh, I was thinking of the one. I was thinking of the one where the kids eat the dude.
Yeah, that's the one. It's the Sumerian god flying across the galaxies to offer his flesh for consumption and in turn doom entire races. I think that's what happened.
Right on.
But anyway, we are at time on this episode, so we should probably close this one out real quick. Is there anything that we need to add? Oh, wait. I do have one thing to add. If you enjoyed this show and you want to hear more, the Patreon bonus episode for this month is an additional conversation with Kat, and we're going to answer even more questions, including some real juicy ones, some real juicy ones after this.
The rest of them are stupid and goofy, so you guys don't get to hear them for free. Yeah.
You always have to pay more for the juicy content. You know?
That's right. It's the best stuff. We're going to have the best time on the one that you, that's worth your money. It's going to be great. So certainly, yeah, if you haven't subscribed to our Patreon, definitely do so, and we'll go more into it. And I'm sure it only gets better from here.
Kat, how can folks find you on the internet? If they wanted to follow your works, what would they do?
Probably the best place to find my work would be Twitter. My handle is Kat Jones Soda, like the Jones Soda Company with my name in the front of it. And then also I'm on Instagram. My handle is Hellfire in My Veins, which is a Caius reference. So if you find that, that's me.
Do it, man. Also follow me, Joe Thrash and Kill. Follow Breno at That's Not Metal. And follow 365 RIP at 365 Days of Horror. That's going to be it for we're going to close out with a selection that Kat made for your music listening pleasure, and then we'll see you next week.
Keep it metal, bros.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Under the sky, love the cross. considerations of the name of the Lord. This is the 6 minutes of God. Shit!